In the Torah reading this morning, we are reminded again of something that's very easy to forget, which is that the people that the Torah talks about were people. We think of them as these great characters, not like us, but in fact, they were people. Remember that Jacob is running away from home because his brother Esau said, "I'm going to kill you." Any of you who come from a family of more than one child have probably heard that. And in fact, even if you're a single child, you may have heard it from other relatives or parents. God only knows. It's not such a strange thing to say. And then he runs away and he finds himself in the village, because there weren't really cities, of his mother's brother. That's who Laban is. Remember, his mother, Rebecca's brother, is Laban. So he runs to relatives, but he hasn't reached the home yet. And he goes to the place where everyone meets everyone. These days, it's Century City. But before there was Century City, there was the watering hole, where everybody would bring, first of all, their buckets to get water for home, and they would bring their camels to drink. And so if you went to the place where there was a well, you would see everybody in the city sooner or later, because obviously, Jacob doesn't know where Laban lives. All he knows is he lives in this town, so he hopes if he stays there, he will find out. He sees a woman, Rachel. Now, how he knew that she was his relative is an interesting question, whether he asked around, whose daughter is that? We don't know for sure. But we do know that Jacob is a young man whose fundamental insecurity is what? We can guess. We don't know for sure. But remember, Esau is his brother. And what characterizes Esau? He's a hunter. He's a big, strong, strapping figure of a man. So it's not impossible to assume that Jacob's insecurity is he's a little nerdy Jewish boy. Right? Because his brother is Esau. Remember, the way he had to steal the birthright was by putting hair on his arms, because he didn't have hair on his arms. He was smooth and hairless. That's what it says. So obviously his insecurity is that he's not going to be seen as a man. So when he sees Rachel, what's the first thing he does? He doesn't go over to her and say hi. Instead, he draws water for all of her camels and gives them water. In other words, he does something manly, right? So that she will see that her cousin is a man. And then after he does that, he kisses her. Now, the Torah doesn't say what kind of kiss this was. It doesn't say. I'm assuming it was the kind of kiss that could be interpreted as a kiss from a cousin. But what does she do when he kisses her? She immediately runs home to tell her father, "There's somebody who says he's our cousin who watered my camels and then he kissed me." So Laban meets Jacob. Now he knows at this point that Jacob is his sister's son. Obviously, first of all, you don't come to a random town claiming that. And also, he probably saw a family resemblance. And then it says, Jacob told him everything that had happened. Everything that had happened. So what's everything that had happened? Everything that had happened is, I stole the birthright, or whether he stole it or not, let's leave that aside for a minute, but I somehow tricked my father into giving me the birthright, and so my brother wanted to kill me, and so I had to run away. What does Laban say at this moment? You are bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. Remember, later on, Laban is going to trick Jacob. But he recognizes a kindred spirit. Jacob says, I fooled my brother. And Laban says, huh, this is Mishpacha, right? This guy I know. And not only that, but it is. He's right, because remember who engineered all the trickery. It was Jacob's mother, Laban's sister. So he really does recognize a family trait, because it's not only in this boy, but it's in the mother. And that leads you also to the final point that I want to make, just to sort of wrap this all together, is why then does Laban want his daughters, because he marries both deliberately, why does he want his daughters to marry Jacob? Well, he wants them to marry Jacob because he knows in the ancient world that that quality, the quality of being able to make your way in the world, even if you have to employ a little bit of trickery to do it, that's what you need to survive. Laban doesn't want a naive son-in-law who won't be able to take care of his daughters. He wants a son-in-law who knows what's what, and is going to get the birthright, and is capable of handling himself, and can make it all the way on the journey from his sisters to himself unscathed and do well. And not only that, but he sees something else in Jacob, which I think every parent wants to see in the child, in the person who marries their child, which is, it's one of the very, very few times in the Torah where it says explicitly that Jacob loved Rachel. So it isn't only that he has a capacity to make his way in this world, but he has a capacity to love. So immediately Laban knows that this is a person I want around, and as you know, Laban tries to keep him around for as long as possible, to the point where Jacob has to employ even more trickery to get his wages from Laban so that he can be compensated and go off and build his own family. The reason I bring all this up is not only because it teaches all sorts of interesting lessons, but also because it reminds us that the people in the Bible are people. If they weren't people, we couldn't learn anything from them. If they were only angels, they'd have nothing to teach us. And in fact, I'll close with this. There is a beautiful midrash that the rabbis tell, that when God was about to give the Torah to Israel, the angels came to him and said, don't give Moses, standing right there, by the way, don't give this Moses the Torah. Give it to us. Because all they're going to do is break its laws and neglect it. We will take care of it. So give it to the angels. And God looks at Moses, says like, okay, what's your argument? And Moses says, they don't need a Torah. Right? We're the ones who are going to lie and cheat and kill and do all that. We need the Torah, because otherwise we won't be better than we would be without it. So you have to give it to us, because to us it'll make a difference. And so the point of the Torah is that it's supposed to be about people. And when you see flaws in biblical characters, it's because they're people like we're people. In many ways better, in many ways exactly the same. And that's why we still read about them thousands of years later, because as the rabbis say, when God gave the Torah to Israel and they looked at it for the first time, it looked to them like a mirror. That is, everybody could find themselves in its pages. And with that, let's bring everybody in.